The sermon scripture this morning, it's from Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14. I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned for me, but had no opportunity to show it. Not that I am referring to being in need, for I have learned to be content with whatever I have. I know what it is to have little, and I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I have learned the secret of being well fed and of going hungry, of having plenty and of being in need. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. In any case, it was kind of you to share my distress. That's the Apostle Paul speaking there. I don't know about you, but you know, when we get into this sort of weather in October and the harvest feast, we call it the Heritage Feast. I've always called it Heritage Time. I feel almost like Thanksgiving is right around the corner, and so I take time to think about many things for which I am thankful, and I'm thankful for all of you for being as crazy as you are to have me here in this pulpit. You may be in 1 year reconsidering why you did this in the first place. Dave and Sandy Gaunt are to blame. Don't blame anybody else. They're the problem children here. One of the greatest gifts, though, that sends us up north to this country, as most of you know, it's our grandson, Wesley. He celebrated his first birthday about a month ago, the 15th of September. Thinking about Wesley and talking to a number of people yesterday, I conducted a wedding in a little place called Rives Junction. Anybody know where Rives Junction is? North of Jackson, exactly. Lowell, that's right. And it's just north of Tompkins Center. I spent half an hour trying to find the place for the wedding. So it was quite a challenge. But I was there talking with people about grandson, and they were saying, you know, you're going to be surprised at how quickly he grows up, so don't miss any of those moments. I think I was talking to a number of people here in the congregation. Mike, I think you mentioned this as well just this past week, saying, you know, here he is, a one-year-old, and then you blink, and he's 18 years old and going off to the prom. Yeah, it just happens. They grow up so quickly. Last night in Grand Rapids, we celebrated, yes, I was there in Rives Junction, headed off to Grand Rapids afterwards. But our son David, he just celebrated his 30th birthday. It was a surprise party. He didn't expect it. They brought him in. But how quickly 30 years have passed. He's the most... And is this being taped? Is this on the internet? Thanks, Robin. But leave this in. He needs to hear that. He is the most perfect son in the whole wide world. He is intelligent, hardworking, full of joy and laughter, as well as a man of great integrity and honesty. And we are so proud of who he has become. And in his particular vocation, he sometimes works 7 days a week and thus has a steady income. He owns a beautiful Cape Cod home. And if you know of any available Cadillac single women, please contact me after the worship service. Thank you. Anybody? As fresh as we are in Cadillac here, you do realize that time passes quickly, and before we know it, 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years will have come and gone. You have joyfully adopted our family, and we, yours, we are your family, we are your friends, and through life's ups and downs, we will do this thing called ministry. We thank you for your generous and abundant support during this initial time here in northern Michigan, the many meals prepared, the cards sent, the stars given, thanks for that, invitations to Cadillac restaurants and movies, and even Bill the Barber taking care of my hair, which is now parted on the other side. It lays better that way. So, thank you. I'll eventually get around to expressing appreciation to every single one of you, though a word of simple thanks and something to back it up means a great deal to all of us, whether we admit it or not. Just remember the last time you held a door open for someone and that person walked through without saying a word to you. Or when you do a kindness for someone, a word of thanks for what you've done is never too much to expect, I don't think. Thank you, you're welcome. There are two important catch phrases necessary for human relationships to continue. I remember reading in the paper a while back that the post office keeps a dead letter section, which is especially designed for correspondence with children, who are writing to good old Santa Claus. The article mentioned how many letters came in last year asking Santa for various things, and there were thousands. But in the months following Christmas, at least this year, there's only one card that was addressed to Santa Claus thanking him. How many of you have forgotten to write that one card to someone or called to say thank you? It's true in business. It's true in relationships. It's true right here at First Congregational Cadillac. That if we care enough to thank each other and express words of thanks to God for the amazing lives we have one with another, all of us together in this community, the process, it's transformative, not only in the lives of others, but within our minds and within our souls and our spirits. It changes us. So there it is, that one letter of thanks. What it can mean. An incident happened just a few weeks ago, and I've been realizing along the way that the reason I've been called up here, not by God, but by Emily, is that I was babysitting our little grandson, Wesley. He and I were eating a cookie together. Actually, I stole one of his cookies, and looking at the sad eyes of our little dog, Winnie, I reached over and shared the last piece of my cookie with Winnie. I can say that to you because Catherine's not here. She doesn't like it when you eat the table. But one-year-old Wesley watched me do this, and then he took what was left of his cookie out of his mouth. He looked at it, and then he started to put it back in his mouth, and then he changed his mind, and he took that piece of cookie and put it right into Winnie's mouth. So how is it this generosity generated? Where does this come from inside the human soul? Was it because he experienced the sharing I had just accomplished, possibly? Every one of us is an acting testimony of kindness, and every act of thoughtfulness, anonymous or not, impacts other human beings in ways we never know. Saying just a nice thing to somebody in a grocery store or at a restaurant, what it can do to a person's day, who knows what that person is going through? What do we really know about that other person's life. But what we do know is that when we reach out in this way and share with others in this way, it somehow may or may not change the other person, but it changes us. The Bible reminds us in numerous stories that little things mean a lot. And Penny just shared one of those with you from the Second Testament. It happens to be in all four Gospels. It's the multiplication of the loaves and fish. And the scripture this morning is from the Gospel of John, but it's always interesting to compare this one with the other three Gospels. They all have a different take on the story. The feature in the Gospel of John is the addition of a young boy. I remember at a theological convocation hearing a minister who became so nervous, he told the story backwards, explaining that the young lad brought 5,000 barley loaves and fish, and the miracles that Jesus and the 12 disciples ate all of it. It doesn't go that way. It doesn't really. One can say either the miracle happened or not, I suppose, but 5 loaves of bread, 2 fish multiplied to feed 5,000 people. Okay? But one could also say that the people saw the generosity of the boy who shared his food, and the disciples and then others shared what they had, and there was enough to feed everyone. Right? So there are different ways of looking at it. But my personal view is to agree with a theologian, Megan McKenna, who reports that 5,000 men were present, and then in one of the other Gospels, right, I think it's Matthew something, not counting women and children. So when we add the women and the children in there, the numbers may be 10,000, maybe 15,000. However you want to exaggerate it, it is a fish story after all, so you can, 200,000 were there, whatever you want, you know. But the point is, you know, that the women were there as well as the children, and whether one speaks in first century Palestine or today, well, women traveled with their children. They brought along some extra food, a few extra sandwiches, you know, and they were well prepared with an abundance of meals. And the women fed not only the men and the children, but also Jesus and the disciples. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, or vape it if you're into e-cigarettes. I was downstairs. I just thought of this yesterday, the pancake brunch. So all of those. There are some very busy, well, there were men working there, but women working too. And, you know, I mean, the store is Bob Evans, but have any of you ever met Bob Evans? I don't know. There is Bob Evans out there, but maybe there is Bobby Evans too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Kevin. Yeah. You see? But the point is, don't ever forget the women, because we wouldn't be. That's right. That's right, Kevin. You can, but you can, you see, you can take this as maybe a modern day story. I was reading another story about the mystery of survival in Haiti, and it was written by a gentleman named Wes Stafford, and he was talking about how the children there in Haiti, they receive rice and beans and powdered milk, small pieces of meat. Yeah, and they live in a hut the size of most American living rooms. And the workers hand out food from little black kettles suspended over charcoal fires. And children wait patiently. He notices many children carrying balls of rice in their fists when they leave their huts. And he asks one boy, a doucette, where he's going with the rice, and the boy replies, "I'm taking it to my brother." And Stafford says, "But don't you want to eat it?" And the boy says, "Yes, I do, but I can't eat it all by myself. I have to share it with someone. I have to share it." Well, it's a matter of sharing with others, and sometimes in our grand United States of America, we figure that at least part of it is ours, but how much of it is ours? We figure also that sometimes when it comes to a place like Haiti, our efforts are so small that they can't make a difference, so we don't do anything. I was listening to what Jerry was talking, Jerry, in our mission moment this morning, neighbors in need. We all say often that let somebody else do it. He or she will do a much better job than I will. And as for money, we consider a token contribution, rationalizing that someone else will take care of the financial end of things. The little I give just won't make a big difference. And similar frustration is expressed regarding donations to people living in poverty in third world countries. Why give money to these foreign missions when we have needs right here in our own country? Besides, with all the needs to be done right here, can my contribution over there make a difference? So we can extend the line of reasoning. Why should I give money to those in other parts of this country when there are needy missions right here in my own state of Michigan? And further, why should I give to the missions around the state of Michigan when there are poor, struggling people right here in Cadillac? We need to help the Stanhauer Clinic, for example. There are many needs right here in Cadillac. And also, what about right here at First Congregational Church? And a bit further, why should I give to the needs of our church and to Cadillac when my own family could use the money? Why should we give to our families, to First Church Cadillac, to the Cadillac community, missions in Michigan, to missions around the country, needs all over the world? The best answer I have, it's because by sharing the burden, by caring for others close to us and far away, we are doing what is morally and ethically the right thing to do. That's why we do it, because it's the right thing to do. And even if we can give only a little, it may come out as no surprise that out of small beginnings come greater things. Giving outside of ourselves, responsible stewardship, can gradually teach us to appreciate the many kindnesses that we receive throughout our lives, more so the unsurpassable, tremendous gift of just being alive, the life that we have together, the life that shares us. And by donating our gifts, we can better appreciate the gifts given freely to us. And it doesn't matter if they are small contributions, if in our hearts we know this is as much as we can give. A little can mean a lot, and it makes all the difference in the world. And obviously there are those who are stretched to the limit financially and cannot donate as others with means can. However, everyone has a gift to give. Time assisting with a fundraiser. I like to call these fundraisers. Or inviting friends and neighbors to come to our church who otherwise have no other church home, or being willing to help with our fall cleanup next Sunday afternoon, October 18th, I better throw that one in, or assisting in worship as a liturgist, or giving a children's sermon, or giving a sermon. You can even wear my robe. The robe is, you know, it's kind of like something to protect me, though it's a little bit, yeah, I need a coat of armor periodically. Providing a musical talent. Thank you, Dorothy. That was beautiful. That was beautiful this morning. Or volunteering for our Sunday school. Karen's doing that. Or our youth programs. Anyway, we all have gifts that we can share. All of us do. The theologian John Nesbitt wrote a story about Barnaby, a wandering juggler in medieval Europe who went from town to town putting on shows for people. He barely survived from the small donations he received. One cold evening, he was walking down the road, penniless, and a friendly monk came riding by on a donkey. The monk offered Barnaby a ride to the nearby monastery, where he enjoyed the fellowship of other friendly monks. Barnaby asked to stay on and help, so they gave him a job doing dishes in the kitchen. Christmas was quickly approaching, and all the talk in the monastery was on the gifts that the monks could offer the Blessed Virgin Mary. They were competing with each other as to who would give the best gift and lay it on the altar before the statue of Our Lady in the chapel. One was translating a book, another painting a canvas, and a third weaving a tapestry, because they knew that in their tradition the best gift would be received by the Blessed Virgin. Oh, some of you know the story. Okay, don't give it away. Barnaby, it's a story that I was sharing with some of our youngsters, but I'm sharing it with all of you because Pat always talks with the children's sermon, and sometimes, you'll get more out of the children's sermon than you will out of this one here. I'm just saying that. Anyway, Barnaby, he was desperate because he had not one suitable gift to share with the lady in the chapel, and when Christmas came, he thought of the juggling equipment which he had hidden under his cot in his cell and which had not been revealed to the rest of the monks in the monastery. Barnaby secretly took his equipment, went to the chapel, spread out a cloth in front of the altar, and proceeded to do his tricks before the statue of Mary. Well, the abbot happened by and was mortified to see what was taking place. What a sacrilege! This scullery boy was desecrating the chapel by performing cheap tricks. But as the abbot hastened down the aisle to reprimand the culprit, he stopped suddenly, for the statue of the Virgin Mary was coming alive and bent over and placed her hand on Barnaby's head in a blessing. He had been the best gift given that year. In the words of Jesus, he had done what he could. And there you go. That's the point. Nice little story. It's the basis of all stewardship. And I leave you this reminder today as we come down to earth and look at the many projects, the many possibilities for the future of this remarkable, beautiful church building and the future of all of us, God's beautiful people. Every one of us can make a difference. And we are not asked to be a Jesus or a Gandhi or a Pope Francis or a Buddha or a small child in Haiti. It should serve us well to remember that the small lad who brought the 5 barley loaves, 2 fish, that Haitian boy who took that rice and to his brother, and our little grandson, Wesley, who shared his cookie with Winnie, and the poor juggler, Barnaby, dancing before the Blessed Virgin Mary, all express to us that every human being on this earth counts for something. And because we are all made in the image of God, because we have value, and because we care about what happens to this church and to one another, today and every day, we're challenged to do what we can to help. It will break or make a world of difference. Amen.